Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Once-in-a-lifetime hail means a very special opportunity to purchase a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. Choose from 42 options. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the Calgary airport.
Well, Derek Wills made a really interesting comment on yesterday's edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable, our welcome back edition. And we were talking about the Flames lineup and stories to watch when training camp starts, and we're expecting that to be Monday of next week. And to paraphrase what Derek said, I think that there's a pretty good chance or a decent chance they'll try to get Derek Forbert into their lineup and have him as one of their six defensemen when their series against the Winnipeg Jets starts. That's where we'll start on today's Flames Roundtable. My name is Pat Steinberg. His name is Peter Klein. And Derek Wills completes our roundtable today. So, first of all, I got the paraphrase correctly, I think. So if I did, how come and how did the Flames go about getting Forbert into their lineup if that's the case?
Well, I'm not saying I would put him in for game one against the Jets, but I would consider putting him in for game one against the Jets. So just to kind of reset what we talked about yesterday. So if you're putting defense pairings together, I would probably go Mark Giordano and Rasmus Anderson. And I know TJ Brody's had a really strong season, especially after coming back after collapsing on the ice at practice in November. Thought he was really good, really solid after that. But I do like the lefty-righty thing. I know Jeff Ward likes that as well. So I'm going to slide Brody down at least to start. So I go Giordano with Anderson. I reunite the pairing that's been together for most of the last couple of years with Noah Hanifin and Travis Hamonic, both healthy again. But the question is, who plays on your third pairing? So assuming Anderson's on the first pairing with Giordano, and that slides Brody down to your third pairing, he gives you the versatility, being a left shot who I think it's still safe to say prefers playing the right side. You can use him on either side, which means you can use him with different partners. Now, Erik Gustafsson is another guy who can play both sides. So he gives you that versatility as well. So I think really it comes down to either Erik Gustafsson or Derek Forbert. With all due respect to Michael Stone, I think he could have an impact on the playoffs if he gets in. Or even Oliver Shillington as a younger guy, I would probably have him number nine on my depth chart at this point. Ahead of Yusuf Alamaki, by the way, who I don't think is going to play unless the Flames really run into a lot of injuries back there. But the interesting thing for me, fellas, is that Forbert and Gustafsson are two very different players. Derek Forbert is a defensive defenseman, a guy who can play with some edge, some physicality. I think that could come in handy against the Jets team that's got lots of speed, lots of skill, and some pretty good size up front as well. But the thing that Erik Gustafsson gives you, he's a power play specialist. Put up 60 points for the Blackhawks a season ago. Obviously, his numbers have fallen off this season, but he certainly is a guy who can quarterback your power play. So he's an offensive guy. Forbert's a defensive guy who, by the way, has logged a lot of tough minutes in his NHL career because where did he play in Los Angeles? He played on the Kings' top pairing with Drew Doughty. So they were getting the tough minutes each and every night. So you know he can play those types of minutes. You know he can play a shutdown role against the other team's top forward. So for me, Derek Forbert would get a really long look. I guess it depends on, A, would Jeff Ward be open to potentially dressing seven defensemen, which is something when I asked him about it during the season, he really hadn't given much thought to or had given thought to doing that and decided not to. Mm-hmm. Or do you go with the offensive guy in Gustafsson, the power play specialist, or the defensive guy in Forbert who you can potentially use in your penalty kill? So different players, and the Flames have guys who can play in different roles. If it were me, I guess I'd see how they both looked at camp and probably go from there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I still have Gustafsson ahead of Forbert. I like what he can bring to the power play. We talked about this a little bit before, and I think when you have a series as tight as potentially the Jets and Flames could be, I think a power play goal or two can really swing things. And I like the offensive upside that you can bring with a Gustafsson. Just make things a little bit more dynamic for your team offensively. There's no question that Forbert can certainly handle his own in his own end, and that would be an asset. But I think if I'm putting my six together, Forbert is probably just on the outside looking in.
He is for me too, and that's I liked what he did in the short time that he was with the team. Like, he and Gustafsson as that third pair were just fine in the games they played. To your point, Wilsey, Gustafson was, I think, starting to get a little more comfortable being the quarterback on that number one power play unit. They were, I don't want to use the word force as in they were forcing something that wasn't working, but they were really making an investment in having Gustafson quarterback that top power play unit as the lone defenseman at the top. So, you know, that's something that I'm very curious to see. What looks like when they get to training camp, like, does Gustafson continue to be in that situation, or do you put somebody else there? Do you go back to Giordano there or something else? But I guess for me, it spins into a larger discussion about what these pairings might look like. And like, I went back and I dove into it because it's been so long, but the last game they played was the 14th straight game that Hamonic had missed. So he was not in the lineup when the Flames took on the Vegas Golden Knights in their last game. On that night, Hanifin was playing with Anderson, Brody was playing with Giordano, and then you had Forbert and Gustafson together. We were going into the next game against the Islanders thinking that Hanifin was not going to play. He had been hurt and suffered a minor injury in that Vegas game. So now Hamonic had been back with Brody. Anderson moved up with Giordano, and Forbert and Gustafson stayed the same. I actually like the idea of not having Hanifin and Hamonic together. I was not enamored by them this season. I thought that they took a step back, significant step back as a pairing from where they were the season before. And I really liked the way things were trending with Hanifin and Anderson. So the more I thought about it, getting ready for today's show and knowing that we were going to discuss this on this particular part of the show, I like the idea of having Giordano with Brody, having Hanifin with Anderson, because they had started to play more together prior to the pause. And then a pairing with left-right Gustafson and Hamonic as your third pairing. I really think there's something there as a third pairing and something that you could really use comfortably. That's kind of what I've settled on, was with everybody healthy, what I like the best. I don't think that's the way it's going to be, but I sure do like the look of that potential 1-6 on the Flames blue line.
Well, the great news is, and Brad Treleving, I think you said before that in a perfect world, you've got 10 NHL defensemen going into the playoffs who are all healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you include Juuso Välimäki, the Flames have 10 NHL defensemen who are going to be perfectly healthy going into the playoffs or going into their qualifying round series. So depth on defense, I think, is one area where the Flames are as strong as any of the 24 teams that are going to compete to either get into the playoffs or participate in the Stanley Cup playoffs this season. And it gives Jeff Ward and Ryan Huska, who's in charge of the defense, lots of options. If one pairing's not working, you can mix the six guys up who are in the lineup that night. And the next night or the next game, you can change it up and you can bring one or two other guys in if you want to. So, you know, having 9 healthy guys, 10 if you include Välimäki, it just gives the coaches so many options. And Jeff Ward can stick with his lefties and righties together, or potentially play Brody on his offside or Gustafson on his offside. And again, maybe they revisit dressing 7 defensemen. So if you want to use Gustafson as the quarterback of your first power play or on your power play, and you want to use Forbert in your penalty kill, well, you can keep guys fresh, especially if there happens to be a lot of special team situations. And then maybe you give that extra ice time at forward to whoever's going that night, whether it be, you know, Elias Lindholm or Sean Monahan or Johnny Gaudreau or Matthew Tkachuk or someone else. So I think lots of options because of all the depth they have back there.
Well, and don't forget that Brad Treleving told us that Alexander Yelitsin is going to be part of the expanded roster. So there's 11 if you count Välimäki. So, and we'll see if Valimaki's part of the expanded roster too. So that's a really interesting thing to watch. And there's no doubt that having depth and having options at that position, if you're hoping to go on a deep playoff run, you're going to need it. And the Flames certainly have it as it stands right now. It's our daily Calgary Flames roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Peter Klein. My name is Pat Steinberg. Okay, so yesterday we talked about our biggest pleasant surprises of the season. And I'm just realizing right now I did not send you the topics today, Willsy, so I'm going to let you have a couple of minutes to ruminate on this one, and I'll go to Klein first. So yesterday we talked about our biggest pleasant surprises on the team. What about on the other side? If we look back at the regular season, they only played 70 games. Peter Klein, you already know the answer to this because we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Who was your biggest negative surprise for the Flames this season?
Mine was Johnny Gaudreau, coming off of the season that he had had. I know toward the back end of the season, things were starting to click a little bit more for him, but it just never seemed to really get going for Johnny Gaudreau. And you look at the underlying numbers and the high danger chances, they were actually in the negative for Gaudreau this year in terms of for and against, which is not a spot you generally tend to see him. And it just, you kind of hope that the season before just about getting to 100 points was really something he could build on. And it just never seemed to get out of the starting gates until really around the end of February and into March. So that would be the one for me, would be Johnny Gaudreau.
Mr. Wills, you want me to go?
No, I can go.
Okay.
Because I'm going to go in the exact same direction that Peter did. I mean, Johnny Gaudreau is the obvious answer, isn't he? I mean, he's a guy who had 99 points last season. I thought he could build on that, because don't forget that when he came back, when that whole line came back from the NHL All-Star break and the NHL CBA break, they weren't the same. They weren't as good.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't as productive. And that, I think, carried into this season. Certainly for two-thirds of that top line, I think Elias Lindholm was the best of the bunch. I think Sean Monahan probably took more heat for how his overall game was than he deserved to. Offensively, his numbers were down, but he was going to get the 20 goals again, and that's what he's been in every single season as an NHL player. So it's not like he completely fell off the map. But I think that Monahan took some steps forward physically and defensively. So I was really looking forward to seeing him in the playoffs, because I thought he could potentially be a more impactful player, even if it wasn't offensively, but just with his overall game, because of the growth that we saw from him this year. But, you know, he took a step back offensively, and he's an offensive guy, and you need him to score goals and produce points. So he took a bit of a step back, I guess, if you want to look at his overall game and how his offensive numbers dropped. But the guy who took a big step back for me was Johnny Gaudreau.
I
really thought he had a decent chance to get to 100-plus points this year. I did. But to Peter's point, until late February, early March, he didn't look like himself. And we watched him every day, guys. Not only playing games, but practice. He wasn't having fun. That's what I saw. He wasn't having fun playing the game anymore. I think he was putting an incredible amount of pressure on himself to take another step forward and to be in the Art Ross Trophy race. And that pressure, I think, got to him. And then he probably started to hear things from maybe his teammates or his coaches or his managers. Certainly, he was hearing it from the fans. And he was a guy who would bring fans out of their seat almost every single night. I'd go to the rink and I'd say, I wonder what Johnny's going to do tonight that I'm going to get excited about. But I just didn't see that guy for a good chunk of the year. But I really thought that he had started to turn the corner. So the timing of the pause for him wasn't great, because I think he, Sean Monahan, and Elias Lindholm, who got reunited by Jeff Ward, were really starting to play like the line we saw in the first two-thirds or three-quarters of last season. Arguably, for that period of time, the best line in the National Hockey League. So I think for Johnny Gaudreau, even though he was trending in the right direction heading towards the pause, this has got to feel like a fresh start for him. So disappointing season to this point. But I still think he has time to rewrite this chapter in his book and really turn this 2019-2020 season around.
My guy was Monahan. I was expecting more from him this year. I really was. And I'm not saying that he can't get there. I know there's plenty of our colleagues, and I think you included, Derek, who really liked some of the strides he took in his all-around game. Just in my opinion, I didn't see the strides the same way that some of the other people I really respect, like you and Lou, saw the same way. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just didn't see them the same way, and I saw some regression in his all-around game. I certainly think the effort was there with Monahan, and I do believe he really dug in on some areas of his game that he believed he needed to get better at. The physical side of things, the face-offs. He definitely dug in and showed some improvement, but the all-around game, his ability to control things offensively and the defensive side of the game, I wasn't in love with prior to the pause. And much like Johnny, I did start to see things trending in a better direction in the month or so prior to the pause. But I went, Gaudreau would be number two. I went with Monahan number one. And them being so attached at the hip throughout their time in Calgary, for me, it had to be one or the other. Just know I was hoping for more this year for Monahan, and I still think he can get to where he wants to be and the team wants him to be. I just hadn't seen it yet this year, so that's why I went with Monahan.
And I understand where you're coming from, and I think you make some really valid points. And I think Sean would tell you that he didn't have the type of season prior to the pause that he was hoping to, certainly not offensively. But I do think that line was really starting to look dangerous on a regular basis. So hopefully they can kind of pick up where they left off. But you make an interesting point, Pat. Sean Monahan has always been the guy. Well, I shouldn't say he's always been the guy because he did play one season in the league without Johnny Gaudreau. But he's always been the trigger man of that dynamic duo. He's the guy who finds the open ice in front of the net. He's got a great shot from the hash marks and in, one of the best finishers from that part of the ice in the NHL, in my opinion. But his setup man wasn't right for a good chunk of the year. So I think that's one of the big reasons why Sean Monahan's numbers didn't take a huge step back, but certainly took a significant step back as far as goal scoring goes. I'll throw in a bonus pick, guys, because I have thought more than once that what this guy did in the previous season Stanley Cup playoffs was going to lead to bigger and better things the following regular season, and it just hasn't happened yet, and that's Sam Bennett. And again, I'm looking forward to seeing him in that best of five series against the Jets. I think he's going to be a really important player for the Flames in that series with the way he can get in there in the forecheck and cause some havoc and with his physicality. So I think he's going to be an important player for the Flames in the playoffs again. But quite frankly, I thought he had a really disappointing regular season coming off a postseason when I think he was the Flames' best player not named Mike Smith in that series against the Avalanche last season. So he was a disappointment for me as well. But again, still time to kind of right the ship as they get set for this best of five series to get things going again.
Okay, final topic on our Daily Flames Roundtable. It's Derek Wills, Peter Klein, and my name is Pat Steinberg. We know that when the Flames drop the puck with the Jets, empty arena at Rogers Place in Edmonton, no fans, no atmosphere, neutral site, so on and so forth. Does that, in your eyes, guys, does that favor one team or the other, or does it hurt one team over the other? Somebody brought that up. I was doing a podcast with a gentleman, and he asked me to be on as a guest, and he asked me that question, and I hadn't really thought of that. So do you believe the neutral site hurts or helps one side more than the other in this Flames-Jets matchup?
I don't think there's a significant advantage. I might give a small advantage to the Flames because Scotiabank Saddledome is no doubt one of the loudest arenas in the National Hockey League in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It can be that way in the regular season, certainly when the Oilers come to town or it's a rivalry game or a great game, but it's certainly not as loud in the regular season as it is in the playoffs, not even close. Bell MTS Place is a little bit different. It's not as loud as it used to be, in my opinion, during the regular season, but still pretty loud. It's a smaller building, more intimate. Fans there were hungry for hockey, certainly NHL hockey. They had AHL hockey for a long time, but NHL hockey for so long that, you know, they're really passionate fans there, just like they are in Calgary. But because of the size of that building and because they were without the Jets for so long, pretty passionate fan base. That's a pretty loud building in the regular season. And much like the Dome, really, really loud come the Stanley Cup playoffs. So the Jets, I think, are probably a little bit more accustomed to playing in front of louder crowds at home during the regular season than the Flames are. So do I give a big advantage to one side or the other? No, absolutely not. It'd be kind of a 51-49 type of thing. But we're probably digging, looking for topics to try to break down this series as we get set for the best of five in early August. But I wouldn't give a huge advantage to one side or the other.
Yeah, the clear and obvious answer is I have no idea. We've never done anything like this before. But I do think if we have to pick a winner in this or one that has a bit of an edge because of it, I'll also lean the Flames way. And it's just I do wonder, like, Game 3, you're in Winnipeg, series tied at 1, and you fall behind 1-2 in the first period. You got the whiteout going in Winnipeg, the crowd's going crazy. I wonder if ghosts of playoff past come back to the Flames and a bit of that doubt creeps in. And it's just an extra level of things that you'd have to deal with that now won't necessarily be a factor. So that's kind of the only way I see it being a lean one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the reasoning that I would say maybe advantage Flames in that sort of a situation.
Well, I'll tell you why I brought it up, because Greg Wyshynski, when he was on with us yesterday, I just asked him, hey, what's your take from afar, Flames, Jets, and the play-in round? He said, the one thing that I'm upset about is that as fans and for him, a neutral observer, we're getting robbed of those two playoff atmospheres that you're talking about there, Derek.
Absolutely.
You're not getting that. So I just thought to myself, who does it really favor? And you're right. I mean, do we really know? Of course not. But the one thing that I wondered was similar to you, Klein, in that, okay, yes, everybody feeds off the crowd, and that's a huge part of why home ice is important come the postseason. However, knowing that there is somewhat of a demon to exercise here for the Flames, and I think more so on Calgary's side than on Winnipeg's side, because that exists, I wonder if not having that intensity for either side might just allow guys who kind of have that black cloud hanging over them, like Giordano, like Monahan, like Gaudreau, to just kind of go out and play. And yes, they're still going to be intense, and yes, the hockey on the ice is still going to be extremely difficult, but the crowd element taken away is such a bizarre unknown element. Maybe it does play into their favor a little bit, or hurt them less than it would be a team like the Jets. That's the only thing that really comes to mind for me.
Yeah, and if you want to dig a little deeper, and I think I'm probably stretching it here, fellas, but the Flames have also played more games at Rogers Place in Edmonton than the Jets have. Being in the same division, they play there more often. The Jets will play one or two games a year there, and the Flames will play a minimum of two games and sometimes three games a year there. And then there's been some preseason games as well. So is there maybe a slight advantage knowing the building a little bit better? You know, from a goaltending perspective, I wonder if there might be. Kelly Rudy has told me in the past that there were buildings he loved to play in because of the lighting. And there were buildings that he hated to play in because of the lighting. And I'm sure there's other factors as well that go into things for the goaltenders. But maybe a very, very slight advantage because the Flames have played more games at Rogers Place than the Jets have. But I think we're probably digging pretty deep here.
it's definitely a really deep dive. But we might have to continue mining for these things until the series starts on August 1st or August 2nd. All right, gentlemen, Mr. Wills, you got an emoji today on Twitter.
Yeah, thank you.
I thought
you might give me the middle finger emoji. I was wondering what you were going to do there.
I asked for an emoji. The established ones who are regulars, don't you? So CJ and Elliot and you and you know, some of the established ones don't get the emojis, but you asked for one.
I appreciate it, and I like your choice. The microphone, the old school. That looks like the Elvis mic. I've got one of those in my office.
So there you go. I thought it would be appropriate.
Good job.
We will talk to you tomorrow, my friend. Thank you, Mr. Wills.
Okay. Have a good night, guys.
Daily sure. Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills.
Let's try that again. Logan?
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Once-in-a-lifetime hail means a very special opportunity to purchase a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. Choose from 42 options. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the Calgary Airport.